Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Throughout the years of Julian's imprisonment and persecution, an incredible movement has been formed. A movement of people from all walks of life, from around the world, who support not just Julian and not just us and our family, but what Julian stands for, truth and justice. We still need your help. What starts now with Julian's freedom is a new chapter.
Julian Assange is free. That's what his wife Stella tweeted after he left the Belmarsh prison in London Monday after 5 years, having just reached a plea deal with U.S. prosecutors that will allow him soon to head home to Australia, ending a more than decade-long legal ordeal. Assange is now flying to the U.S. territory island of Saipan, where he'll appear before a U.S. judge Wednesday morning. We'll get the latest. Then low-income advocates are joining with climate protesters in New York to demand Democratic Governor Kathy Hochul reverse her shocking decision to cancel New York City's congestion pricing program just as it was set to begin.
I've come to the difficult decision that implementing the planned congestion pricing system risk too many unintended consequences for New Yorkers at this time. For that reason, I have directed the MTA to indefinitely pause the program.
Opposition to Governor Hochul's move spans generations. We'll speak with MTA board member David Jones, head of the Community Service Society, about how $15 billion in funds from congestion pricing would have been used to expand and improve New York's mass transit system. And we'll speak with climate activist Keanu Arpels Josiah with Fridays for Future NYC. He just graduated high school. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange could be just hours away from freedom after he accepted a plea deal with the U.S. government and was released from a U.K. prison. Assange took off from London's Stansted Airport Monday, ending a 12-year-long ordeal that saw him take shelter at the Ecuadorian embassy for 7 years, followed by 5 years in Belmarsh prison to avoid extradition to the United States, where he faced up to 175 years in prison for publishing classified documents exposing U.S. war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan. Julian Assange's jet has stopped in Bangkok to refuel before it continues on to Saipan in the Northern Mariana Islands, the U.S. Commonwealth in the Pacific Ocean, where he's expected to plead guilty to one espionage charge of conspiring to unlawfully obtain and disseminate classified national defense information. He will then fly to his home country of Australia to be reunited with his family. Julian's wife, Stella Assange, spoke to Reuters earlier today.
Of course. I mean, I think that the correct course of action from the U.S. government should have been to drop the case entirely. We will be seeking a pardon, obviously. But the fact that there is a guilty plea under the Espionage Act in relation to obtaining and disclosing national defense information is obviously a very serious concern for journalists and national security journalists in general.
We'll have more on this story after headlines. We'll speak with Julian's brother and other advocates for his freedom. In Gaza, Israeli attacks have killed dozens of Palestinians over the past day, including 14 people who were sheltering in UN-run schools in northern Gaza. Another attack on Khan Yunis killed at least 10 Palestinians as they were either seeking or helping shield aid supplies. UNRWA head Philippe Lazzarini offered a stark assessment of the situation in Gaza 9 months into Israel's slaughter.
Gaza has been decimated. For more than 2 million Gazans, it is a living hell, a nightmare from which they cannot wake. Catastrophic levels of hunger across the Gaza Strip are the result of human action. Children are dying of malnutrition and dehydration, while food and clean water wait in trucks.
In Gaza City, Palestinians mourn the death of two medical workers killed by Israel, including Gaza's director of ambulance and emergency services, Hani al-Jafarwi. This is Hatem al-Swerki, who works at the Ministry of Health.
We appeal to the international institutions to take a clear stance on these continuous targeted attacks, as we have lost more than 400 health professionals in the Gaza Strip and more in detention. We lost dozens of health institutions to complete or partial destruction. We say to the world, isn't it time for you to stand up and to protect the Palestinian human, to protect medical crews and institutions, to respect the Palestinian ambulance badge?
An Israeli airstrike in the Shati refugee camp reportedly killed 10 relatives of Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh, including his sister. Meanwhile, in the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces have carried out more violent raids and arrested another 25 people. Israel's top court has ruled that ultra-Orthodox Jews in yeshiva schools are subject to the military draft and must immediately enlist or lose government funding. The Supreme Court decision risks further destabilizing Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's fragile government coalition, which relies on two ultra-Orthodox parties. In Ukraine, Russian missile attacks killed at least five people, injured dozens of others in the eastern town of Pokrovsk. Meanwhile, Russia summoned the U.S. ambassador in Moscow and vowed to retaliate after a deadly Ukrainian strike on Crimea Sunday, which Russia says was carried out using U.S.-supplied missiles known as ATACMS. In Kenya, police deployed tear gas, rubber bullets and water cannons on demonstrators as organizers call for a national strike and 7 days of rage to protest proposed tax hikes and demanding the resignation of Kenyan President William Ruto. Among the protesters was Alma Obama, the half-sister of Barack Obama, who was tear-gassed by police during a live interview on CNN.
How can you tear-gas your own people? Listen to them. Listen to these children. They're the future. They're 80% of our population. 80%. If they decided to turn against us, they can. And that is what they're doing now.
Reports have also emerged of a number of protesters who've gone missing. Authorities are surrounding the Kenyan parliament in Nairobi, which protesters plan to occupy. In other news from Kenya, armed forces are readying to deploy to Haiti with some 400 officers set to arrive there later this week. President William Ruto Monday held a ceremony for the first contingent of the UN-backed troops, part of a larger mission to combat worsening gang violence in Haiti. Many Haitians have opposed the mission, citing past international interventions that have contributed to political destabilization and humanitarian crises in Haiti. In New Caledonia, fresh protests have erupted after France extradited seven independence activists, including protest leader Christian Ten, for pre-trial detention. New Caledonia has been under French control since its colonization by France in the 19th century, but some 40% of the population is Kanak, and a growing independence movement is seeking to end colonial rule. Back in the U.S., the Supreme Court has agreed to hear a challenge from the Biden administration to a Tennessee law blocking gender-affirming care for transgender youth. The case, which will be heard in the next term, could have major implications for trans rights in dozens of other Republican-led states. Rallies were held in front of the Supreme Court and across the country Monday as the nation marked 2 years since the right-wing-led court overturned Roe v. Wade, ending the constitutional right to an abortion. Nearly two dozen states have since restricted abortion, with 14 states now banning the procedure. Vice President Kamala Harris spoke in Phoenix, Arizona, at a reproductive rights event marking the anniversary of the Dobbs ruling.
2 years ago today, the highest court in our land, took a constitutional right that had been recognized from the people of America, from the women of America. And thereafter, in state after state, laws have been proposed and passed that criminalize healthcare providers. You know, in Texas, they provide prison for life.
In related news, a new study shows Texas has seen a 13% increase in infant and newborn deaths since the state imposed an abortion ban. And abortion is expected to be a major issue in Thursday night's debate between President Biden and former President Donald Trump. In Louisiana, a group of multi-faith and non-religious parents has filed a lawsuit over the state's new law mandating the Ten Commandments be displayed in public school classrooms. This is plaintiff Jeff Sims, a Presbyterian pastor with children in Louisiana public schools.
This new law doesn't just interfere with my and my children's religious freedom, it tramples on it. The separation of church and state means that families get to decide if, when, and how their children should be introduced to religious scripture and texts, not the state.
And prosecutors are recommending the Justice Department bring criminal charges against Boeing after the company violated a 2021 settlement that would have shielded Boeing from prosecution over two crashes in 2018 and 2019 that killed all 346 people on board. The Justice Department has until July 7th to decide whether to prosecute Boeing. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange is free. Assange has been freed from prison in the UK after accepting a plea deal with U.S. prosecutors. He's now flying to the Pacific island of Saipan in the Northern Mariana Islands, where he'll appear before a U.S. federal judge Wednesday morning. As part of the plea deal, Assange will plead guilty to a single felony count of illegally obtaining and disclosing national security material. He's expected to be sentenced to time served. Julian Assange will then be allowed to fly home to Australia. The shocking developments cap a more than decade-long legal ordeal for Julian Assange after he published classified documents detailing U.S. war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan, including a video that showed a U.S. military Apache helicopter in Baghdad killing 12 civilians, including two Reuters journalists. WikiLeaks titled the video Collateral Murder. Press freedom groups have denounced successive U.S. administrations for targeting Assange, who'd been facing 175 years in U.S. prison if he'd been extradited and convicted. 12 years ago this month, Julian Assange entered the Ecuadorian embassy, where he was given political asylum. He spent 7 years there. He has spent the last 5 years locked up in the harsh Belmarsh prison in London. His wife, Stella Assange, said earlier today, Julian will now seek a pardon after the plea deal.
Of course. I mean, I think that the correct course of action from the U.S. government should have been to drop the case entirely. We will be seeking a pardon, obviously. But the fact that there is a guilty plea under the Espionage Act in relation to obtaining and disclosing national defense information is obviously a very serious concern for journalists and national security journalists in general.
Earlier today, Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese said he wanted Julian Assange brought back home to Australia as soon as possible.
I've been very clear as both the Labor leader in opposition, but also as Prime Minister, that regardless of the views that people have about Mr. Assange's activities, the case has dragged on for too long. Yeah. There's nothing to be gained by his continued incarceration, and we want him brought home to Australia. Yeah. And we have engaged and advocated Australia's interests using all appropriate channels to support a positive outcome, and I've done that since very early on in my Prime Ministership. I will have more to say when these legal proceedings have concluded, which I hope will be very soon, and I will report as appropriate at that time.
I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Well, these are certainly stunning developments, and we're joined right now by three guests. In Washington, D.C., Trevor Timm is with us, executive director of the Freedom of the Press Foundation, a group that's long advocated for Assange's release. In Sydney, Australia, Anthony Lowenstein is with us, independent journalist, longtime supporter of WikiLeaks, and author of the best-selling book, The Palestine Laboratory, How Israel Exports the Technology of Occupation Around the World. And we're joined by Julian Assange's half-brother, the filmmaker Gabriel Shipton, joining us from La Rochelle, France. Gabriel, can you talk about these latest developments that have shocked many around the world? As we speak, Julian Assange has already landed in Bangkok, has left the maximum security prison Belmarsh, headed to Saipan, where he'll enter a U.S. district court, and then freed to go home to Australia. How did this all take place?
Well, this has been years, many, many years of advocacy at many, many levels across government, in Congress, through the media, through non-government organizations, advocacy organizations like Trevor Timm's Freedom of the Press Foundation. This has been a huge campaign that has been a global campaign, a grassroots campaign. And this is the culmination of that campaign. The Australian government has, as you heard from the Prime Minister now, the Australian government has been really at the edge, the coalface now at the last moments, making sure that Julian can get home. They're the only government that can represent him diplomatically. But it's the real pressure from the Australian people that led them to be able to advocate so strongly for Julian Assange. So I've been speaking to Julian over the past week. He's been getting ready to get on this flight. It all seems very surreal and overwhelming. I mean, we're overjoyed as Julian's family. He still has a couple of hurdles to get through, as you described, before he is completely safe and sound on Australian soil. But Stella and my dad are looking forward to meeting him on the tarmac once he arrives in Australia. And this is just such a happy moment for us all, Amy and Juan. And thank you as well to your reporting on this case. Without media organizations like yours, people wouldn't know what's going on. And many of your viewers out there who I know have advocated for Julian, I want to thank them as well from the bottom of our hearts. It's an amazing moment.
And Gabriel, there have been now for several weeks some reports that there was an impending potential plea deal that would gain Julian's release. But could you talk about in your discussions with your brother what finally put it over, and also why he is flying to the Northern Mariana Islands to appear in a federal court there? What's your understanding of that?
Well, there was a High Court appeal hearing coming up on the 9th and 10th of July in the United Kingdom, and that appeal hearing was Julian's appeal was approved, and it was expressly on the freedom of expression parts of this case, that Julian would not enjoy freedom of expression rights if he was extradited to the United States. So There was a bit of a ticking clock for the DOJ to push this through. I doubt they would have wanted to have a very high-profile freedom of expression case in the UK courts running running up to this election season. So I think there was a bit of pressure to get this resolved. The UK election is also coming up, but I have to give credit to everybody out there who's been advocating for this for so long, because this wouldn't have been possible without them. The stopover in the islands, that is the closest US jurisdiction to Australia. So Julian can stop off there on the way back to Australia, and the judge can hopefully accept the plea deal. So that's the idea and thinking around stopping there. It's only 6 hours away from Australia and is on the way back from the United Kingdom.
And in your conversations with Julian in recent weeks, what's your sense of his health? Because there have been many concerns over the years of his imprisonment and restrictions in terms of his health.
Yeah, well, his physical health, his mental well-being has been worn down through his time in prison. So now he has, not quite yet, but hopefully in the next day or so, he'll be able to get some serious rest and recuperation, spend time with his two small children and his wife, Stella. Yeah, it's just a very happy moment for us. The doctors I've spoken to have seen Julian, said he can recover. So we're hoping that he gets some time now to do that, where just some quiet time, you know, to listen to the birds sing and maybe take a swim in the ocean. I spoke to Julian and he said that he was looking forward to maybe going to some of the places or seeing some of the places that he used to roam around in Melbourne. But I think life's going to be a bit different for Julian now. The last time he was in Melbourne or in Australia was many, many years ago, before he had such fame or notoriety. So it's going to be a different life for him, but a free life, which we're all, very pumped about.
Well, Gabriel Shifton, congratulations. Assange's brother, speaking to us from La Rochelle, France, where he's at a film festival. He's also the producer of a film about Julian Assange and his father called Ithaca. We're going to break and then come back to Trevor Tim in Washington, D.C. at the Freedom of Press Foundation, and Anthony Lowenstein, who lives where Julian Assange is headed, Australia. Stay with us.
Times are strange, here I come, but I ain't the same. Mama, I'm coming home. Time come by, it seems to be, you could have been a better friend to me. Mama, I'm coming home. You took me in and you drove me out, yeah. Me hypnotized, lost and found and turned around by the fire in your eyes. You made me cry, you told me lies, but I can't stand to say goodbye. Mama, I'm coming home. I could be right, I could be wrong. It hurts so bad, it's been
Mama, I'm Coming Home by Ozzy Osbourne. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Julian Assange is free. That's what his wife tweeted after he left the Belmarsh prison in London Monday, having reached a plea deal with U.S. prosecutors that allow him to soon head home to Australia, ending a more than decade-long legal ordeal. Julian is now flying to the U.S. territory island of Saipan in the North Marianas, where he will appear before a U.S. district judge. He will plead guilty to one felony. He faced 175 years in a United States prison. As we continue our coverage, we're joined in Sydney, Australia, by Anthony Lowenstein, independent journalist, longtime supporter of WikiLeaks. And we're joined in Washington, D.C. by Trevor Tim, executive director of the Freedom of the Press Foundation, a group that's long advocated for Julian's release. We welcome you both back to Democracy Now! We have spoken to you both about the issue of Julian for many years. Trevor, if you can talk about the significance of this moment, the fact that, I mean, in the last week, it looks like this deal was negotiated.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Amy. You know, I think the first word that comes to mind is relief. This case was a ticking time bomb for press freedom rights in the United States. You know, the case wasn't getting a ton of coverage in the mainstream media, so I think there was a misconception that Julian Assange, because he was charged under the Espionage Act, was charged with spying. But what the Espionage Act essentially says is that you can't receive and obtain and publish government secrets. And of course, that's what journalists do in this country all the time when they're covering national security, whenever they're covering policy. And so thankfully, we've avoided the worst case scenario, which would have been a court precedent and a conviction in court, which then would have bound other judges potentially in future cases against other journalists. But I am still worried about this guilty plea because the one charge that Julian Assange was is, you know, essentially pleading guilty to is a conspiracy to violate the Espionage Act. And so while there won't be a legal precedent, there might be a practical precedent in the sense of future federal prosecutors might feel emboldened now that they know that they've secured a guilty plea against a publisher to go after others. You know, it's possible even though judges won't be able to cite this case or won't be bound by this case, that they will know that it has occurred. And so, you know, I still think that the press freedom implications are potentially worrying and that we're going to need to keep an eye on them.
And Trevor, why do you think the Biden administration didn't just drop this case? Why did they continue to pursue it so persistently?
I mean, it's really shameful that the Biden administration has kept up this case for so many years. You know, at Freedom of the Press Foundation, we organized a huge coalition of every major civil liberties organization, press freedom organization, and human rights organization in the country. And, you know, in the first few weeks of the attorney general being in office, we, you know, denounced the case and implored them to drop it. And that coalition repeated its call pretty much every 6 months for the last 3 years. You know, President Biden has gone out of his way to talk about how journalism is not a crime and that he respects press freedom. Yet this case has, you know, essentially been hanging over journalists for the entire time they've been in office. They absolutely should have dropped it when they came into office. And you know what? They could have dropped it yesterday. And Julian Assange could have served the same amount of time in prison. They seem to have wanted a symbolic victory, which, again, you know, could potentially hang over the heads of national security journalists for years. You know, so in my and I, you know, don't get me wrong. I don't blame Julian Assange for taking this deal at all. He's been through an incredibly harsh ordeal himself. But I do blame the Obama administration, or sorry, the Biden administration. And, you know, I hope this doesn't come back to haunt them and haunt us.
And could you talk somewhat also about the conditions of Julian's confinement in Belmarsh?
You know, I think I just know from media reports that Julian has suffered from, you know, a series of serious medical conditions and has been isolated for long periods of time when he's been there. You know, we have to remember that this case started during the Trump administration. The Obama administration actually refused to prosecute Julian Assange for the exact reason that we're talking about now. Eric Holder in the Attorney General's office during the Obama administration, you know, was reported to talk about the fact that there was this quote unquote New York Times problem, that it would be impossible to prosecute Julian Assange without then affecting newspapers like the New York Times and Washington Post, who, of course, also have reporters who talk to sources within the government, who ask them for documents, who receive documents and then publish documents that the government considers classified. So the Obama administration actually rejected this case despite not liking Julian Assange at all. The Trump administration revived it. And unfortunately, the Biden administration has continued it on for 3 years. And, you know, again, thankfully, Julian Assange is finally going free today. But the press freedom implications, I think, remain to be seen.
I wanted to bring Anthony Lowenstein into this conversation, independent journalist based in Sydney. It's where Julian Assange is expected to fly into to meet with his family on the tarmac. His wife, Stella, talked about she has not known him. since she met him when he was under house arrest. You know, Democracy Now! Also has interviewed him over the years, from when he wore an ankle bracelet to when he got political asylum in the Ecuadorian embassy. If you can talk about being an Australian and from Australia, your prime minister and the parliament.